So the question is, what is the meaning of the tapping of the sticks and the carrying of them during our walk? That comes from, I think, from a beginner. Otherwise, this question has been asked many, many times, because probably you never heard the answer before. The meaning of the tapping of the sticks and the carrying of them may scare you. We call that the incense plank. It's just like when we were educated in Hong Kong in the British school, and the British teachers always say, spare the rod, spoil the child. So in a true authentic meditation hall in China, they have vigilators. Do you call them vigilators? Yeah, vigilators. We have vigilators circumambulating when you're sitting. They are vigilators who carry the stick on their shoulders and walk very, very lightly around. You don't even notice them. You may be meditating like that with your eyes closed, and they will actually, three or four carrying their sticks, walking around. Make sure that you are in the right position. Why? Because after a while, people may be like this. They're sleeping. They're sleeping, they're drowsy, and then the vigilator have to use the stick to correct the position. They push your shoulder, using the stick to push your shoulder. Why do you have to use a stick? Because masculine and feminine, you can't have touches, and you cannot have any touch, no touch of body. So use a canned stick to make sure that you're in this position, make sure that you are corrected to this position. And sometimes some people have a hunchback like that. Then they straighten out your back. And some people may be even snoring. Then they hit the shoulder to make sure that you have to get widely awake. You have to be mindful of what you're doing. So they are disciplinary actions. These are disciplinary actions, carrying sticks around. And when you're circumambulating, some people, when they're circumambulating, walking, they're browsing around, they are thinking, they're not mindful of the walking movement. And in the inner circle, those who are circumambulating should be fast, and they go very slow. So the vigilator would put a can on their shoulder and say, faster. That means you're blocking up people. So you have to go very fast. And sometimes you can see them actually running in the inner circle. So you have to follow all these instructions. You won't bump into each other though. It's like the birds, a flock of birds flying out in the sky. Have you seen them bump into each other in the sky? They will maintain their own distance naturally. So carrying a stick during the walk, the tapping is to make sure that you follow the instruction. When you have to stop, then you stop. When the wooden fist is hit, dock, and then everybody stands still. That means you are being alertist. If you're not alertist, you don't listen, you carry on, then you're not being mindful. You continue to walk, it's not being mindful, till you stop. When you stop, when that wooden fist is hit, and then all of a sudden you also heard the three or four or five or even 20 or 13 the vigilators would plank the floor to show you the authority of those who are in charge. You have to, the teacher are there. The cats are there, rats don't play. So make sure that you know that they all the plan. If there's 20 people hitting the floor at the same time, it's like thundering. And here, because we're in North America, it's just a simple. We never use it to really correct people or hit people. In authentic meditation hall in China, they actually hit you, but they don't hit you in the vital parts. They hit your shoulder. You won't be injured, but there's a slight pain, and also it's quite disgraceful to be always hit by the vigilators. And the vigilators, if they think that you are so disciplinary that you have been reminded a few times, they ask you to leave. And during meditation, no one is allowed to leave. They give you all kinds of, if you go meditate in China, you want to try it once, to go to Yangzhou to meditate in Gaomin Monastery. In the first day, they give you a whole sheet of regulations. One of the regulations says that during the meditation, you cannot leave. Now, if you want to go to the washroom, you should go to the washroom in the intermission. Now, if you cannot stand it, we don't mind if you just do it there, but you can't leave. Yeah, you can't leave. So, and also when the door is closed, nobody is allowed to leave. So people who go to Gaomin Monastery in the old days, they usually have to train their legs before they go to participate. Because you cannot just put both legs on the floor. You have to cross your legs. So you have to practice crossing your legs before going over there. So there's a lot of regulations that you have to carry out. And I read in the old days, they were so strict that some beginners, novice monks, they couldn't stand the discipline, and they want to get away stealthily. They want to walk away. They pack up a little bit of the knapsack, and they want to sneak out. But they built their wall so high, seven feet wall, brick wall, that you really have to climb. And some part of it is even 8 feet and 9 feet. And they have records that novice monks who stealthily walk away and climb the brick, they broke their legs. And they carry them back to do it again. It's very strict. And that's the reason why they produce, for centuries, they produce a lot of very successful meditators, a lot of excellent teachers over there. And one of the teachers over there is Xu Yun, Empty Cloud, the monk by the name, the nickname Empty Cloud. He was invited by the king of Thailand. That is about 100 years ago, to teach meditation in a Thai temple. And he meditated for 1 month, no food, just meditate for 1 month. No food, no drink, only for 1 month. He was able at a certain stage that is very advanced. And he lived up to 125 years old. There's a lot of autobiography about him. And when he was born, he came out not as an ordinary baby. He came out in a meatball from his mom's womb. Come out in a meatball. And actually, that is the embryo, medically. It's that you have to cut it open. It's by a membrane. It came out like that. And the father was terrified. Oh, it must be a strange, odd thing coming out from the mom's body. And they wanted to throw it away and burn it. And then they heard locking at the door. A herbal medical doctor came by, and they saw him throwing out something. And what is it? Oh, that's a meatball from my wife. And the medical doctor cut it open with a knife, and that's the baby over there in there. And that's Xu Yun. And he lived up to 125, and during the Japanese occupation, after the Japanese occupation, before the Great Leap Forward, remember there's the Cultural Revolution, there's a Great Leap Forward, a lot of revolutions in China after the Japanese occupation. There's still a lot of revolutions under the communist regime, and they have the Great Leap Forward. A group of soldiers came in to searched the temple for treasuries because they believed that donors always give a lot of donations to the temple, and he wanted, at that time Xu Yun was the abbot of the temple. He wanted the abbot to, where are your hidden treasures? Take them all out. Well, I don't have any hidden treasures, I have nothing. So they hit him with a stick until he was dead. And they went away. A few guys hit him with a stick all over the body. It was all bruises all over the body, and he was dead. And then his attendant put a thread in his nostril, and he finds it's still a little bit of moving. So actually, he's not completely dead. So they put him on the bed, and just about maybe a week later, he came back again. He woke up and he came back again, and he asked his attendant, "Do some record something for me. Get a pen, get a paper, and record what I have." At that time, he's already 115 years old, an old man, 115 years old. He was already dead, but he left for 7 days and came back again, and he said, "Record what happened to me after my death." And actually, to summarize it, he went up to Tushita Heaven, where Maitreya Buddha was teaching Vijnanamatrata. You know Vijnanamatrata? Consciousness. In Tushita Heaven is a huge, vast place where the outer space is for sentient beings in heaven. They enjoy extreme happiness. They don't have any suffering. They live millions of years of longevity. And in the second half, it's where Maitreya Buddha is teaching in there, teaching to a lot of sentient beings who, while to be born in there, they don't have to go through reincarnation anymore. When you practice and make a vow that you want to go to Tushita Heaven in Maitreya Buddha's land, and you'll be reborn in there, if all the conditions fulfill, of course. And at that time, he went up there, and Maitreya Buddha, the loving Buddha, the Maitreya Buddha, was teaching there. What does he teach? He teach consciousness. And then he found some old friends sitting on the side, on the aisle, and he found an empty seat in there, and intuitively, he knew that seat is for him. He just left there. He left the seat, went to this world to be reborn as a monk and live another 115 years. And that he was there before, but he left there, and now he's returning. And Maitreya Buddha, seeing that he's returning, he said, "You cannot return. You have to go back to serve your karma." "No, I don't want to go back again. I don't want to go back." So he wanted to sit in there, and Maitreya Buddha said, "No, there will be a time that you have to come back, but you haven't served all the karma yet. Your time is not ripe for coming back yet." And then he woke up again. He came back in an instant. And that only happened to him just about 1 or 2 minutes, but it's already 7 days, maybe 10 days, I forgot. So it's recorded in his autobiography. So, it's not just this world. There's so many other worlds. It's not just this life. We've got previous lives. When you come to think of it, it's logical. Because in this life, what do we get as our time dimensions? We have the present. Do we have a past? We have a yesterday. We have a last year. We have a past. And if we still live, we have a future. So our time dimension is present, past, and future. But if you look at from the perspective of this one life, you didn't have that time dimensions. You only have this life if you look at it this way. That is not right. Because how come that in present life you have three dimensions of time, past, present, and future, and in this life, erroneously, you look at it as just one life? If it's just one life, then you didn't have a past life, you didn't have a future life, then you just live once. Now that's a very dangerous concept in your mind. If you only live once, you just want to do anything you want. I only live once, I can do anything I want, as long as I'm happy. I can kill, I can steal, I can commit sexual misconduct, I can do anything I want because I only got one life. You are very righteous. You don't want to do anything. You want to be good. Well, it's the same. You want to be good? I don't have to be good, right? I can do anything I want. If I'm poor, I can rob a bank. You know, that's what you think. As long as I have the money, then I can enjoy myself. You're a poor guy and you don't want to rob. You just live as a poor guy. But I robbed the bank and I got billions of dollars and I live like a king. So, of course, I prefer that. But that's an erroneous conception. That's the karma you created. You could be caught in this life if the present karma is mature enough, but you carry the karma in previous lives. These things go on and on and on. And that's equity. I still remember the headmasters of Pali Institute, University of Hong Kong. He's a good friend of mine. He's a principal over there, a university principal. And he told me that the first time he read a Buddhist sutra, there's one thing that really impresses him. And he, because of that one thing, he likes to research more. And now he's become a Buddhist. Well, I think, what's that one thing? He said, Buddhism is fair. Why is it fair? Because if I do bad things, if that is it, no more effect, it's not fair. You kill someone and that's it. You don't have to get punishment. It's not fair. You've done something terribly wrong that you got no retribution. That's not fair. But if you have a future life, that's fair. Because then you get punishment in the future life. In other words, if you have done something wrong, you can't get away. Even if you can't get away in this life, you can't get away in your future life. And what you already have suffered, or what you have already enjoyed, if we view that as the effect, you already have cultivated the cause. You already have done something in your previous life to make you what you are today. What you are today is an accumulation of what you have done in your past. So we are different. What you have done, every individual, what you have done is different from what I have done. So you are different from me. Your karma is different from me. Even though we have the same common karma. Remember this, a common karma and an individual karma. The common karma is we have done something so in common that we enjoy or we suffer in common together. What is that? So if we've done something good, then we enjoy our time in Canada. We can go to the same Safeway, we can go to the same Save-On Food, we can go to the same Richmond Hospital. I have the same right as you do, because we've done some common karma that give us the same right, the same enjoyment. But then each individual has individual karma. You are rich and I'm poor. You look handsome and I look ugly. You look tall and handsome, I look short and ugly. And you were born in a good family, I was born in a poor family. You had good education and I didn't have good education. Everybody is different. You have a good wife and I have a bad wife. A good husband and a bad husband. Your kids are all good and my kids, they're terrible. They are terrible teenagers now and I'm worrying about them. Everybody is different. Why? Because you have done your own karma. So don't blame God. Don't blame God for it. It's you who have done it yourself. Oh, yeah?
Well, just something for your consideration. We use enlightenment and awakening interchangeably.
Yeah.
But perhaps there are subtle differences. Could you share your thoughts on that?
Enlightenment?
Enlightenment and awakening.
And awakening, oh, yes. Enlightenment and awakening, they are not the same. I don't think they are the same. It depends on how you perceive it. If we are talking about something ultimate, enlightenment is like an eternal thing. Awakening, I don't believe in reincarnation. And then I meditate and I think, I research and analyze. Oh, I think it is. That's reincarnation. That's an awakening. You're awakening to something truthful. I used to be gambling all the time. Now I heard about the Buddha's teaching about karma. I don't think it's right to gamble. I don't want to get on drugs anymore. I don't want to have intoxication. That's an awakening. And I have been eating a lot of meat. Maybe I shouldn't support killing animals for food. I should render my compassion to all sentient beings. I want to be a vegetarian. Why? Because I want to be compassionate. I don't want to hurt animals. I know that every day in slaughterhouses, they slaughter millions of animals and pigs and cows and sheep and chickens and I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to support them anymore. That's an awakening. And sometimes you were meditating and you don't know anything about emptiness, about prajna, and maybe slowly and slowly you're awakening to it. So that's the reason why you may not realize it. You are a completely different person from from say 9 years ago. You could be a disgruntled person. You could be a person who always like to complain, who are a person who always are depressed. And you could be a person who's depressed, who's always jealous, and who's always have anger in you. And now as you meditate and meditate more, you gradually have been given yourself awakening that you are a different person. And maybe some of your friends who knew you 9 years ago, who haven't seen you, and they met you in the street, oh, Mr. So-and-so, oh, you look so great. And when you talk, you put on a smile in your face, a natural smile, and you become a very special person. You changed because you have achieved a lot of gradual or even sometimes sudden awakening. And that's good. And that's also enlightenment. That's also enlightenment because to be enlightened is your wisdom grows. You see things with an enlightened mind, not with a polluted, ignorant mind. And that's very important. Enlightenment and awakening are different. But again, many, many awakenings will build up to an enlightenment. That's the way we look at it. Yeah? Oh, why they are, do you mean, in some of the, I couldn't hear it, you mean some people at the back, you know, they were chanting at the same time when meditating. That's not right, because you're disturbing other people. No, it's not right. When you are silently meditating, you should not be chanting. You do not do that. You're disturbing your neighboring meditators. Shouldn't do that. Yeah. You could do it silently in your mind. You know, you don't have to voice it out. Say, for example, Om Mani Padme Hum. You know, silently in your mind. Then you are using that mantra as your object of attention. Right. But you're not. You're doing this, it's the same. Right. If you're having a mantra, to concentrate on a mantra, it's okay too. You can concentrate on your mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme. It's just, you use that as your object of attention.
Yeah. I use Om Mani Padme Hum that way as well, but silently. I find that it stops monkey mind. Well, my mind will start jumping all over the place when I'm starting to think about this, and all of a sudden I'm somewhere else. But if I do that silently myself with Om Mani Padme Hum, then I'm quite a lot more successful.
Yeah, everybody is different. So if you, when you are using Om Mani Padme Hum, and you find that to be very helpful to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some people use a sentence. Who is chanting the Buddha name? Who is chanting the Buddha name? Some people, they arouse in them a suspicion, and they concentrate on the suspicion, and they become very successful in that too. You know why they have a suspicion? How does this suspicion work? It's just like, I give an example of a balloon. That is the suspicion, who is chanting the Buddha name? It's a question, right? The question is like a balloon. And you always have that question, and the balloon gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Previously, when you have that, who is chanting the Buddha's name, the balloon is very small because you have all these other spaces for other wandering thoughts. Many, many thoughts come up. So balloon is very small. Imagine the whole universe is just your wandering thought in the space, your billions of wandering thoughts, instantaneous wandering thoughts, and that question of who is chanting the Buddha name. So when you first start with that, it's the smaller the balloon, who is chanting that Buddha name? And then you keep on asking yourself, who is chanting that Buddha name? The suspicion would grow. When this suspicion grows, all the others, because you have no time for all these other wandering thoughts, It's all in here that it grow. It's replacing the space. It's replacing all these other wandering thoughts until it fills up the whole universe, or it fills up a very huge space. And one day, because of certain conditions, some people picked at the balloon, boom, the balloon burst. Mm-hmm. When the balloon burst, then because you only have that suspicion, then it's released. All of a sudden, your emptiness, you don't have even that question anymore. That suspicion, that question anymore is broken. And then what do you find? You find that the whole space is there. The whole space is without thought. In that moment, there's a strange feeling in that moment. And many meditators gave out verses after the enlightened. We call it enlightened now. They got enlightened, and they voiced out something from their heart. For example, this empty cloud monk, he was holding out a hand to receive some hot water, and the hot water splashed on his hand, and this balloon burst, and he voiced out a gutter, a verse in his mind. And it reads something like this. The space is broken. My prison is gone. The space is broken. My prison is gone. And everywhere is flowers, and everywhere is spring. My prison, because we've been living in a prison, and that prison is broken. The family prison is broken. Remember, we live in three prisons. In three prisons. The closest your prison to you is your own body. That's where you're trapped in there, in your own body. Generally, we're in three prisons, your own body. The second prison is metaphorical, of course. It's the family prison, the bondage prison. It's the bondage between husband and wife, the bondage of the relationship between your children, your relatives, and all that adds together to give you a lot of mental afflictions. That is the second bondage, the second prison. The third prison is this world. We're born in this world of desire. That's the third prison. We want to break these three prisons out. These are the cocoons, three layers of cocoon that the caterpillar have to bite it to get out from there. And the Buddha have done that. He's got out from the cocoon. But we haven't. He told us how to do it. And some of us follow that route and become successful. But many do not. Many, they reincarnate life after life. Life after death, and after one life after another, we call it reincarnation. Okay, so that is, you can have a mantra, but you have to do it silently. Yes?
Venerable, I'd heard 49 days from the point of death to a reincarnation. Is that correct?
49 days? Yeah, according to the sutra, when a person passes away, there is a time span of 49 days that he's in a bardo stage, B-A-R-D-O, bardo stage. You check it out from the Tibetan Book of the Dead, bardo stage. When a person passes away, he could, if that person has done many, many virtuous deeds that would qualify him to go to heaven, then he does not have to pass through the bardo stage. He would, boom, he would be reborn in heaven, because he's so virtuous, he's done so many virtuous deeds. On the other hand, if someone who have done non-virtuous deeds, who have been very atrocious and who have been a lot of wicked deeds, he does not have to pass through the bardo stage. Immediately he will go down to hell. All these others who have done some good and some bad, they were in the bardo stage where the time is not right for them to go through incarnation. And they won't wait longer than 49 days. The bardo stage is not the ghost realm. It's not the ghost realm. Because in the ghost realm, it means that he will be in the ghost realm. It's not in the bardo stage. But after the bardo stage, he may be in the ghost realm. Okay? So it's 49 days, yes. So during those 49 days, if the person who passes away have a lot of estates left over, use his estates to do good deeds and dedicate back to them. And do a lot of good things for them because they know about it. And also, don't let the person who passed away hang on to the world. So if there's a lot of crying, there's a lot of thinking about the person who passed away, he knows about it, he won't go away. He will be staying behind in the ghost realm. So in the 49 days, it's very important that we have to do something. So that's why we have services